to another great episode of the Games in Schools and Libraries podcast. I'm Donald Dennis, the Teen Technology and Gaming Librarian for the Georgetown County Library System. And my home-based library is here at the Wacomonic Branch Library, where I am here with...
Stephanie Fry, and you can find all the information you need about Waccamaw Library's events at facebook.com/WNBteens.
Right, and if you have trouble finding that, just drop me an email at ddennis@gtcounty.org, and I'll send you a link, because sometimes people have difficulty finding it, even with the correct address, more so on mobile devices than on computers, and I don't understand that, but apparently there's some kind of hard-to-find algorithm for our stuff. But anyway, so it has been a busy year for us, and it's been a while since we've recorded. So I thought that, hey, let's go ahead and talk about what's been going on with us gaming-wise and what's been happening here at the library. The big thing that's going on is our IT department has sort of thrown up their hands in surrender and have said, you know what? You all get to manage your computers yourselves. And mostly that's just here at the Wacomonic Branch Library, but that's kind of scary because I know just enough about computers to get myself into trouble.
It'll be fun.
you did something as far as licenses.
That's right. I reached out to Unity, and they actually gave us some licenses for their program so that the kids can learn to develop video games.
Right, and so let our listeners know what Unity is and why that matters, and of course how it relates to games in an institution like this.
Unity is a piece of software that you use to create video games.
What games would they recognize from Unity?
So games they'd recognize from Unity would be like the Kerbal Space Program game. Ooh. And Never Alone.
Wow, okay. Those are two wildly different kinds of games. So if we like to do all kinds of design stuff, and sort of our makerspace is headed in the digital realm when we taught folks how to do apps and whatnot this summer. So we're hoping that we can do a Unity video game design program for this upcoming summer as well. And so we're hitting the ground right now so that we can learn it and get up to speed before we have to teach the kids how to do it.
Right. And this will be a really nice step up from the CS first classes. So
absolutely. So that's exciting. If you have an idea of the kinds of things we should put on our computers for teen activities, then let us know, especially game-related stuff, but it doesn't have to just be that. Should we go ahead and talk about the convention?
We should talk about the convention. Dewey Desicon!
Yeah, so we have, you know, lots of space at this library, and it's all set up so that we can use it, some of it during after hours, and so we're going to set up a convention here the second weekend of March, here in the Grand Strand at the Wacomonac Branch Library System in 2016. If you'd like to come and play games with us, right now we're thinking it's going to be free, all right? So you can show up and play games with us. Spread the word, especially if you're in the area. But we will be talking about the process of getting folks to help us put the con together, organizing events, doing our promotional materials, and all of that kind of stuff to hopefully help any listeners with putting together their own events. So what are you most excited about for this upcoming event, Stephanie?
I'm really excited about, honestly, just all the board games we'll be playing. And I'm really excited about how we're running Artemis. I can't wait to see how that goes.
Right. We're going to have, of course, our 12 computers that we've got here set up and ready to go for Artemis. But folks might also bring in tablets and other things that they can hook up to our system. So we'll be able to run two full ships of Artemis, and we'll see, do they decide to work together, or does it become a knife fight between the two ships?
Yeah, do they start firing missiles at each other?
Right. We have mostly board games as far as our non-digital collection, but we're also going to have a large area for role-playing games.
Or miniatures.
A bunch of tables for some miniatures. We have some huge tables that will be great for miniatures. And some folks will be coming and doing Star Wars miniatures and War Machine and other neat systems like that. And I'm going to bring out some spaceships that I have for some systems that I worked on. So that's all going to be fun. We're also going to do some cosplay.
Yeah!
And with our Crunchyroll subscription, we're going to do some anime and show off anime in one of our little meeting rooms that about half the time, or maybe if the demand is there all the time, we will have a bunch of anime that's showing off. We're also going to try and draw in some local artists and writers, and if there's any game designers, maybe do a little unpub mini, you know, one of the days. And on that Friday, before, you know, the big event, you figure that after work on Friday and then Saturday are going to be the really big days.
Yeah.
We're reaching out to the local librarians from this region and trying to have like a trade day where they come in and they learn about specific games that they might bring in for their particular libraries, or, you know, game-like activities that they can use to sort of bolster, you know, their outreach programs.
We're trading tips and secrets.
That's right. So if you're looking for a business excuse to show up for this, or something that is career-related, and you're in a school or library, you can say, but look, they're doing a trade day. I need to go to this and see if your director will send you.
We promise. You'll learn something.
Once again, you can contact me at ddennis@gtcounty.org. for my library email. So let's see, what else do we have to talk about? Oh, I went to Board Game Geek Con and I picked up a game that I can't wait to get to the table called Paperback, and it's another word game, and I saw all kinds of activities and events, and there are a few games that I now really want to get for our library. Time Stories, which mm-hmm. is a game that you can only play through once. It's a 3 to 4 hour experience. So if you're circulating games at your library, it's going to be like the perfect thing, because you can play it, and you can play it with one group of kids, and then you can facilitate different groups going through it. But I don't know what the age group is appropriate for it yet, or anything like that, but I'm really excited about it. I have played the heck out of Mysterium. Ooh, actually, we should review that. That's one that we should...
Should review that.
And... basically, Board Game Geek was very exciting. I was supposed to do some recording for this show there, but I was a bad person and did absolutely no real work at Board Game Geek Con, but I guess it was a vacation. So hopefully next year, if you're going to be at any of the conventions I'll be at, which will probably include the Dice Tower Con and Board Game Geek Con and Scarab here in January, then let me know and we will do some recording with you and talk about either your programs or, you know, any other topics related to, of course, games in schools and libraries.
We did.
All right. So one of the big things that we did was we threw a tea party here at the library.
A steampunk tea party.
A steampunk tea party. September, we decided September was a great time to do steampunk activities. So we painted goggles.
Yes, out of swim goggles.
And we did what else?
So we took light bulbs that had been burned out and we recycled them into ornaments by making them look like little hot air balloons.
And we played a bunch of steampunk themed games. And at the end of the month, we had a huge party with a tea tasting.
It was delicious.
We had, what, 16 or 18 different kinds of teas?
We did.
The friends of the library and other folks who have come to my iPad classes brought in their tea pots, and we had one of the great big urns that was filled with gallons of tea, because we needed a lot of tea at the same temperature for our tea dueling competition.
Yes.
Which, we apparently there's an actual tea dueling organization here in the United States. We didn't know that at the time, so we actually were calling it a dunk-off. Because, well, how does a tea duel work, Stephanie?
Okay, so the way that a tea duel works is both participants have a cup of tea, and they each have a biscuit. And
wait, a biscuit?
A tea biscuit. Like
oh.
A cookie.
No, okay, all right, yes.
Not the big fluffy one.
You're in South Carolina. You've got to specify what kind of biscuits you're talking about.
I do have to specify. Okay, and what you do is you take your tea biscuit, and when whoever is facilitating the match says go, you'll dunk your tea biscuit in. And you'll try to hold it in as long as you can without it crumbling. Then you'll pull it back up and eat it. Whoever holds their tea biscuit in the longest without it crumbling and manages to eat it wins the tea duel.
Right. So if you pick this soggy biscuit up and it collapses and implodes on your hand, then it may still be a delicious mess, but you are not getting through. And we did the best 2 out of 3. And for this, of course, Stephanie and I dressed up in costume. My wife helped me make a cool top hat, and I waxed my mustache and everything. And so that was exciting and fun. the kids got into it. Before we started, they were like, I don't know about this. What are you talking about?
Yeah.
And by the end of it, they were like, we need to do this every week.
Yeah, they did. I think the snacks helped to a certain extent.
Oh, that's right. We had all kinds of snacks. I brought scones, and you cooked little Top Hat cookies.
Yes.
And crumpets.
Yes, and I had little tea cookies that were shaped like gears that were half dipped in chocolate.
Right, and I brought in a variety of, you know, English tea biscuit things too, and we had some of those donated as well.
Oh, and I made crumpets.
Okay, crumpets, and oh, you made crumpets. Yes, they were amazing, delicious. Now, a lot of the kids were not very interested at the beginning. Like, I don't like tea. I'm like, well, but you haven't had this tea. And so we had some no caffeine tea with the berry flavors from Celestial Seasons. We had a special historical tea.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, we had the historical tea that was actually dumped off the Boston Harbor.
Now, it wasn't the actual tea that was dumped off the Boston Harbor. It was just the same kind of tea or brand because there wouldn't be much flavor if it had been sitting in the Boston Harbor. Well, okay, there wouldn't be much good flavor if it had been sitting in the Boston Harbor.
There would have been plenty of flavor.
We had some Earl Grey. We had some chai. We had a whole variety of them. A chocolate rose tea and green teas and, you know, gunpowder. Actually, I don't think we actually managed to get in any of that. But, you know, just a whole bunch of different kinds of teas. And because we had little paper Dixie cups.
Right. That really helped because the kids didn't feel pressured to finish an entire cup of tea.
Right. They could say, just get a little taste of it. And if they don't like it, then they could move on to the next one or go and, you know, get a sweet treat or something like that. So it was by all accounts a wild success. We even had a couple of girls who showed up in costume. You'd say they were fashionably late to the tea party.
Very fashionably.
And so once again, you can see some pictures for that on our Facebook page, and you'll see photos of the tea duel and photos of the line of tea that we had and all kinds of stuff like that. And it was, the whole thing was sort of surrounding this, you know, mythos of the tea duel. Like, we're getting together to do this thing. We're tasting and we're trying. And yeah, we played Roost, which is sort of a who did it murder mystery kind of game.
Right, with suits. And that one got played a lot.
And there, of course, we had our Forbidden Desert, which has got the airship in it, and a variety of other games that we had out and were played and stuff. But the kids just had a great time, so it was a neat experience that wasn't set up really as a game experience, but there was the competition, and they got to do all of that other stuff. Lots of fun. Enough of the tea duel, and we always talk about Minecraft, but our Minecraft experience has really sort of changed in here. It's still big on Fridays, but they're every day now during the week. It seems that we have kids show up right after school, and they jump onto Minecraft, and they have found a new place where they go online, and they're no longer really using our server anymore, but they go to Mineplex, I think.
Yeah, Mineplex and the Mining Dead.
Right. And so it's a Walking Dead themed server where they're trying to stay alive and wander around and, you know, fend off the zombies. And then the Mineplex is a bunch of mini games that you can get in with your friends, you know, and go for 5 or 10 minutes. And it's either like a capture the flag sort of thing or you know, hunt down the other people.
Or you'll be walking around on blocks and they'll slowly be disappearing under your feet and the last person standing wins.
Parkour! And so it's kind of neat that we could still do our server stuff, and as new kids join the group, they might do a little bit of exploring on it. But by and large, while our external internet is, the signal is strong enough, they're going out there and playing that. And we've had some days where, you know, for whatever reason, the internet to the outside world is awfully slow. So they'll say, hey, turn on the server. And that's great to have that as a backup option.
Oh, definitely.
So, and we've added mods. We had one of our young Minecraft enthusiasts came in. He says, all right, I've installed all the mods on this flash drive and the server, so you can install it onto your computers. And so it's very excited that they know enough about this, that they're bringing it into us and letting us, you know, set up a server like that. And in fact, they came in and recorded videos one day of them playing Minecraft.
That's right.
And I think it posted it on their YouTube channel, or it may not be up yet, but if we figure out where it is hiding on the internet, we'll link to it in a future episode. So I guess the only other game-related thing before we get to our reviews is that it's kind of neat that for a while, before when we first opened up, the board games were huge and hot. All right,
yes.
We didn't have all the video game systems set up, and everyone was playing video game, or everyone was playing board games all the time. Then when the video games got set up, they sort of became less, you know, excited or interesting for the kids. And now we have, we're still teaching new games and showing off new games that some of our YA patrons will come in and ask, hey, we want to play Forbidden Island, or we want to play King of Tokyo, or what are some of the other games that are popular? Oh, Magic the Gathering. Oh,
yes, Magic the Gathering is really popular right now.
And the neat thing is we're going to get our friends of the library either hooked up with a local store or find a distributor who will sell to them so that they can sell some Magic the Gathering cards through the Friends of the Library bookstore that we have here in our library. And, you know, with that, of course, we have to talk to the kids about collectibles and trading and stuff like that, but we'll get into that probably in a future episode.
Right.
And now before we go do some reviews, we're going to hear from Matt Saunders about starting up game clubs at your school.
Hi, I'm Matt Saunders from Yellow Parable. I wanted to begin a segment about starting a board game club in a public school. Several years ago, I ran a club at an elementary school near my work. I sort of ran it as a community outreach event. When I switched jobs, I stopped leading the club since I wasn't going to be near the school any longer. I have been waiting for my own kids to be old enough to start a club at one of their schools. My oldest son began middle school this fall. Back in the spring, while we were at an orientation event, the principal talked about a chess club that had been running for 2 years. After the orientation meeting, I sought out the principal, introduced myself, and asked him if he had any interest in having a board game club at the school. He was interested and told me that he would be in contact with me in the future. My wife works at the school, and the teacher she works with also has an interest in board games. So I had an immediate connection with a faculty member who could help sponsor the club. 3 weeks ago, I met with the principal to lay out plans for the club. The school has a built-in after-school period, 2 days a week. Students may elect to stay on these days to receive a little extra help on their homework or their musical instruments. For the past 2 years, this has also been the time frame for when the chess club met once a month on the first Tuesday of the month. It's only 40 minutes long. The principal felt it was best to schedule the board game club at the same time as the chess club. The principal is thrilled about the board game club starting, and I'm excited too, but as I was leaving our meeting, I realized I have a few challenges to overcome. The first is the short time frame. We only have 40 minutes. Since the club participants can take the academic bus home, there is less of a transportation burden on families, and therefore more inclusive to potential participants. The second challenge is that the club only meets once a month. The frequency is not quite as high as I expected because all of the teachers who stay after school for the club are volunteers. The principal feels he would need to compensate teachers' time if there was a higher frequency. I guess this makes sense. The final challenge is the potential size of the group. 2 years ago, the chess club began with just 20 fifth graders. Last year, the club included 5th and 6th graders and had over 40 students participate. This year, the chess and board game clubs combined will have over 60 participants. To overcome these challenges, I figure I need to plan on using games that have three characteristics. They need to be easy to learn, they need to play quickly, and they need to utilize a high player count. I've pulled 10 games from my shelf that meet these criteria. Some of the titles include Dixit, Tsuro, For Sale, Quirkle, and Sushi Go. I also reached out to a bunch of my friends and coworkers who also love board games so they could help volunteer with me. So far, one of my coworkers is joining us. There are also two teachers helping to sponsor the club. In my next segment, I'll give a report on how things went. What were the successes, and did I bite off more than I could chew? Until next time, this is Matt Saunders of the Yellow Parable.
Well, that's it. I think it's time for some reviews.
Sounds good.
What do we want to talk about first?
Well, you mentioned Mysterium.
Oh, yes. Okay. Mysterium is a game that has relatively recently been released, and it's kind of like Clue meets Dixit.
Yes.
Which is to say that there are a bunch of cards on the table with really cool pictures on them, and then one player is the ghost, and so we'll pretend I'm the ghost, and I will be handing out pictures to the other players, cards, that they will be trying to figure out which one of the people in the people area is the one whom they're trying to guess.
Right.
Based on that.
And maybe he'll hand me a card that's like a scarecrow holding a butcher's knife, and at first I'll be like, I don't understand what this is. This has nothing to do with any of the people on the table. But then maybe I'll realize one of the guys on the table is a cook, and cooks use butcher knives.
That's right. But if there's also a farmer there, then, oh, I've narrowed it down to you between the two. And so I don't remember what all the characters are. But yeah, and so once she's picked that, if in the seven rounds that you have to sort of get complete with this, she's finished that one, and then the next, after she's picked the right person there, then she's going to try and figure out where it happened, one of the locations, and then she's going to have to figure out which weapon was used to kill somebody. And then after all of that happens, there is, if everybody gets finished and everybody has picked their three things and gotten them all correct, then there is another round where, depending on how well people have done elsewhere in the game, either betting on their friends being correct or incorrect, then all of the players are going to have to vote to figure out which one of these is the real person who they're trying to catch. And if the vote doesn't come out with the majority for the right person, then they lose. But if it comes out for the right person, then they win. And so that's sort of how the game plays out. And I played it, we played it here a few times. When I was at Board Game Geek, we played it several times there. And when I was at home for Thanksgiving, it was the most played game over that week at Thanksgiving. So it is, a very, very interesting and exciting game, and it's one that the players get to talk a lot about, except for if you're the ghost, you don't get to say anything, you just get to hand out cards.
Right.
So it's kind of frustrating, but it's also kind of neat to see the other people go through their deduction process based on these obscure clues that you're giving them. That's it for me. It is a green light game all the way. You can play it, and in fact, if you're playing with kids, you might not do that final deduction round. You might just get through and say, all right, you are trying to figure out who it is before six turns are up or eight turns are up, and run that. And then as they get better at it, then you can go through and do the final round, which is how we first played it here in the library, as we didn't do the final rounds.
Right. It's definitely a green light game for me. I really enjoyed the deduction part of it. And it's always really interesting because you are trying to determine how other people are perceiving things and what clues they're trying to give you.
Moving on from there, let's talk about one of the games that was actually sent to us as our, hey, congratulations, you guys are starting a games program at the library pile of swag. And that was from Calliope Games, Gotham.
Gotham is a game about trying to catch each other. So you're on a board that's full of squares that are different colors, and you'll be moving around the board and you'll be putting up walls on the board, and you do this by playing cards. So you may play a card that says you get to put a wall up on a green space, and then you get to move two spaces, or you get to jump over one wall. And so what you're trying to do is make sure that simultaneously you're catching the other players without cornering yourself.
Absolutely. And it's for up to four players, and it works very well at two, three, or four players. If you play it as a two-player game, it's kind of got that intenseness that you have when you're playing chess, all right, as far as where I'm moving my piece matters, what's going on there. Now, there is, of course, luck, because what cards you have can affect, how you're playing, or where you can play, or what special things you get to do. Some of the cards let you go through walls so that you won't be pinned. So there is that huge element of luck, which makes it very appropriate for playing with kids who are, still learning strategy games, and it puts them more on an equal level with, people who are a little more skilled. So age difference is not so huge when playing Gotham, or I guess Gotham, because it's got an exclamation point on it. The other thing is there are two different games in the box. On one side, there's the colored board with all the colored squares, and the other one is more of a white area, and it has a little bit more one of the games is a little more skill-based and the other is a little more luck-based. I tell you what, it's one of those games that people... You said people have been playing it here, right?
They have been playing it here. It's actually pretty popular.
When we first got it out, it didn't sort of have the eye appeal because we had it set up early on when we opened up the library. And, you know, it doesn't necessarily have a, hey, this looks really exciting, let's play it. But when you see people playing it, if it's a kind of game that you're interested in, and it's going to appeal to a lot of the, I would say, 8 to 14-year-old crowd pretty strongly, then because you're pinning each other and you're trying to escape, and there is a little bit of what feels like conflict without being violent.
Right. I think it's one of those games that's going to appeal more if you've got it set out rather than just the box art alone.
Yes, yes. And if you can play it with them, I think that that's a big deal, because you can explain the game in like 2 or 3 minutes.
Right.
They can start playing it, and once they've played it, it'll kind of get their hooks in them.
Right. So it's one of those easy to teach, but still skill-based.
Yeah. So that is Gotham by Calliope Games. And what are you going to give this as a rating?
I'm going to give it a green light. I enjoy playing it. And it's neat because you can either try to, you know, catch them immediately or start planning ahead and start building a wall out ahead of them.
Right. So for me personally, it's a yellow light game, but I think for libraries, it doesn't have a lot of piece dependency. You know, a couple of the walls can break or get lost, and they're not going to be easy to break, and the game is still playable. The pawns can be replaced by any particular pawn, so if one of the pawns, you know, gets lost, that's fine. The board seems to be durable, and it's kind of a 3D piece, so it's substantial. So I think for libraries, it's definitely a green light if you're looking for something that plays a variety of from 2 to 4. You don't have to have the full 4 players to make it a fun experience, and it doesn't suffer from, I think, any particular number of players. We received an ancient game, one that is older than myself, even, and we're not going to go into how old that might be, called The Amazing Dr. Nim. And it is very popular here in the room. And why don't you explain that one?
Well, I think it's so popular just because it's fascinating to look at. So the way this game works is you have 15 marbles, and the point of the game is you're trying not to be left with the last marble. And there are a bunch of flippers and sort of levers.
Right, you'd call them gates if you were doing sort of like a computer or even, you know, dynamic flow of things. So the whole premise of the game is on your turn, you're going to push the button to release 1, 2, or 3 marbles. And as it goes, it's going to trigger these gates to open or close depending on where the marbles roll. And then Dr. Nim, on his turn, you flip one of the toggles, which says, hey, it is his turn. And then based on what he does, you push the button once, and it will automatically then trigger no more marbles, or 2 or 3 marbles will then go through, and then it is your turn again, because it automatically flips the lever back to say, oh, it's your turn again.
And it's really fascinating to watch.
And we always have one of the kids in here, he swears he beats it all the time, and then that's not what happened, because our copy is so old and we haven't yet put any silicone spray on it or graphite or whatever to make it, the little things move back and forth more easily. But it's just pretty interesting to see how they try and figure it out. And I don't think that, you know, you have 2 days go by before one of the kids walks by and tries to play it again. Because just yesterday they played it for, you know, 5 or 10 minutes, and that's enough for them to give it, I don't know, 3 or 4 goes.
Right. I've pretty much seen somebody try it at least once a day.
It's an engineering problem that you're trying to figure out how many times you're going to push that button and make the machine fail. And I don't know. I haven't researched it online. It may not be possible for Dr. Nim to fail based on the way the gates are set up. Or it may be that somebody has already solved this. So it's just kind of neat to have our friends of the library are like, oh, you guys have games. I have this cool thing. They also delivered a copy of Monopoly that was a Biohazard. The pieces were, it's from, there wasn't a Monopoly box. There was just a box for the pieces and a board that came separately. And that's kind of cool. So we kept some of the pieces, but We had to dispose of the board for health reasons before.
So much ballin.
And yeah, and who knows what else. So, and we're going to start asking our friends at the library to, it's like, hey, this month we're looking for chess boards. Next month we're looking for domino sets or that kind of thing, because you know, a lot of the houses around here probably have two or three extra chess boards in them.
Oh, I'm sure.
What else are we talking about? Oh, steampunky, along the steampunky lines, one of the games I brought in was...
Girl Genius,
the Works. Girl Genius, the Works, yes. All right, so in Girl Genius, the Works, there's a tableau of cards out in front of you. They're alternating sort of, you know, up and down and or left and right. And on all four sides of the cards, there are symbols. And on your turn, you are going to turn one of the cards. And if the symbols match up, the cards are going to trigger. Effects will happen. Cards will come off the board. And how do you win?
So you win by collecting enough points. And you'll be trying to add points to your pile. And every time you pop a card, something happens, which could get you even more points, or it could make you lose points.
Right. And so all the cards have instructions on them of what happens when that card goes off. So it's a neat reading skill, because they have to understand what the effect is and they have to know how to cause things to happen on the board. And it's possible that you might trigger multiple cards to go off in one turn, because when I flip this card around, it'll match my card and the other card may match one on the far side. And so, you know, you can cause chain reactions of the things to happen if you want to or if you're not paying attention.
Right, and like there's some of them that will make all the soldier cards pop off the board, and I've seen one kid practically pop the entire board. We had to refill it at the end.
That's pretty neat. I don't even know if that's still available, because that's one that I brought in for my own collection for Steampunk Month, but if it is, then I certainly recommend getting it, especially if you're looking for, you know, it's Girl Genius. If you're looking for more gender-positive games, but that really doesn't matter, and the play of the game is just a lot of fun, and the mixture of powers is kind of exciting, and the graphics are neat. I think it works really well. So for me, that is a green light game. I've kept it for, what, 10, 15 years now at this point, so.
Right, it's a green light for me, too. If a kid asked me if I wanted to play it, I would just be like, yes.
All right, so at this point, we're going to go over our big game, because we're trying to do one larger game that, you know, might be beyond some programming uses. But this time, what are we covering?
Mice and Mystics.
Ooh, okay. Mice and Mystics. What is Mice and Mystics?
It's kind of like a board game D&D campaign to a certain extent. Dungeons and Dragons.
Right.
It's kind of a step down from it, but it's a good... It's kind of a good trainer for role-playing games.
Right. It's an adventure game where there's an ongoing story between it, so there's chapters and stuff. And, oh, one of the interesting things is... there is a thing that you read at the beginning of each episode, and you can have the kids read it, or the librarian or storyteller can read it, or you could even record a thing where you read it and they play it. But the folks who created the game had a well-known voice, a well-known actor, reasonably well-known actor, read it, and so you can buy that for $10 and have the audio play through when you want to play the game. And it is an ongoing campaign, so the players who play it will build up characters. They get more loot, and they get, you know, better at their jobs and stuff as they go on. So for your library, you could do it as one child or one person is playing each of the characters for game night and have it go on for several months and, you know, one night a week. Or you can let them change which characters they're playing each time and get through the scenarios that way. So, but I mean, it is neat because it has storytelling in the game. The whole premise is that a bunch of the characters at this kingdom were turned into mice in this castle, and so they are trying to escape the castle and the wizard and get turned back into the people whom they are.
And they have to fight stuff like cockroaches, and spiders, and centipedes, and other rats.
Right. One of the scenarios is just avoiding a bird that's flying over the courtyard while they're moving about. And it's an exciting thing, and it's, if you have the miniatures and they're painted, it's very eye-catching. But even when you don't have them painted, the kids are sort of excited too. So, oh, what's this? I want to play that.
Right.
So it is sort of a longer game, though I think the scenarios take, after setup of the game, which is probably the most complex part,
yeah,
a half an hour to 45 minutes per scenario. They can go longer, I'm sure, but the bigger part of it is teaching the rules and setting up the game and making sure that everything happens. And the game timer is cheese.
Yes, so much cheese. And one of the really cool things about it is if you are playing it as a campaign style, there are certain little side missions that you can take along the way that will actually affect things later on. So you might get some kind of bonus if you've helped somebody out back in the past.
Right. And I would say that this one really is better for teens than it is for sort of the 8, 9, 10 range. Though you can play it with kids that area if you're willing to sort of help them along or realize that the rules may be a little more fluid than you're used to.
Right.
So what would you like? What light would you give Mice and Mystics?
I would green light it. I would play that forever.
Yes, and me too. I'd played it before we purchased it for the library, and I'm excited that, you know, hopefully this January we can start going through all of the different scenarios with the groups, and it'll be neat to see the kids sort of bring in other kids and start playing it and take over the role of sort of facilitating the game.
Yes.
So that's that. All right. Now I think we do need to take off because, yeah, 20 minutes or so, all of the kids are going to be pouring out of school and running over here for Minecraft Day. So we've got to go get our computer set up. But thank you for joining us. And Stephanie, thanks for talking with me.
Anytime.
If you are not tired of hearing my voice, you can wander over to InverseGenius.com and find out all about the On RPGs and On Board Games podcasts, where also the crowdfunding edition lives and we talk about kickstarting games. Or come back here next time and hear more about games in schools and libraries. I'm Donald Dennis.
And I'm Stephanie Fry.